And welcome back. In 1967, Catherine Switzer became the first woman to compete in the Boston Marathon, an event in which only men had previously competed. Catherine's participation opened the way for sanctioned women participants and served as an inspiration to women on many fronts. She has continued to inspire by dedicating a multifaceted career to promoting equal opportunities for women. She's a broadcaster, marketing specialist, member of the USA Women's Hall of Fame, and motivational speaker. She's in St. Louis on behalf of Girls on the Run, an international organization dedicated to inspiring and empowering young women to live healthy, productive, and active lives through running and other activities. Also with us is Courtney Berg, the executive director for Girls on the Run St. Louis. Girls on the Run St. Louis has been around for some 15 years. 30,000 young women have gone through the program in Missouri and Illinois. Ladies, thank you so much for being with us. Catherine, welcome to St. Louis.
Thank you, Don. It's great to be here and be part of this great city.
Let me start with you and ask you to tell me how running inspires young women.
Can I tell you, my dad said, honey, you should run a mile a day when I was 12 years old. He was hoping I'd make my high school field hockey team. And he had no idea that he gave me a victory under my belt every day that nobody can ever take away from me. It was amazing, the empowerment and the sense of self-esteem and confidence that I got from this. And it translated to every area of my life. And it has always been my life ambition to pass this on to every little girl and grown woman I've ever met. And it's been a privilege to be doing that. But for a little girl to just have something she can hang her hat on, to something that gives her a sense of strength, something that gives her belief in herself and her own capability, is something that'll last her whole life.
But that's just one of many things that young women and young men could do to foster self-esteem.
Yes, but I got to tell you, running is different. Running is transformational. And there's a reason why today 58% of all the runners in the United States are now women. It's a social revolution. It's happened in my own lifetime. And it's because somehow, whether it's the covering the distance, adding the miles, it's the motion movement, it is the endorphins, it is the sense of accomplishment. Whatever it is about running, for all these reasons, it is very, very transformational. And it is different from the way men feel about running. Men find it an enlightening experience also, but more of a competitive experience. Women find it a community and empowering experience.
Does all this apply, Courtney, to Girls on the Run St. Louis?
I'm nodding emphatically, Don. it's what we hope our girls feel, yeah. Right? You know, how do you teach resiliency, right? Well, what we know is you have to have that confidence through accomplishment. And that is the key part of Girls on the Run, is if you allow girls to have the opportunity through that physical activity component of it, it's exactly what Catherine is describing. You cannot take it away. And so no matter the context that we have our girls in, so these social norms that we don't feel comfortable in, or, you know, these messages that we don't like our young girls to get, we're working on those. Mm-hmm. But in the meantime, they're equipped to feel confident, capable, courageous.
How does it work in terms of where do you run? How
sure.
do you run? I mean, you've got a lot of girls who are involved in this program, and they're spread out over a wide area.
Right.
So how do you bring them together to get them to run?
Right. So the beauty of running and the beauty of Girls on the Run is you can do it anywhere. And that's part of that empowerment, right, is that we want our girls to feel that they have that confidence in their own body, their own skin, and in their own community. So we have teams, and we have 2,500 girls participating this season across our, you know, 30 counties. And what's beautiful is that they can practice anywhere. You know, it might be that beautiful groomed track or trail. It also might be part of the alley between their school and, you know, another parking lot. It's their own space, and that is very empowering. And our girls all come together for our 5K at the end of their 10 weeks, and that is very celebratory.
When is that happening?
That's Saturday, November 14th, downtown.
And downtown, does it go up into the park area at all? Or?
No, so we our girls own downtown St. Louis that day. So they're down. We start in Soldiers Memorial, and their families and the whole community is there. We'll have almost 10,000 people there. And the girls complete their 5K along with their coaches and family members and anyone else. And that is where, you know, kind of the best 5Ks happen, and that's where our girls do it.
Catherine Switzer, this must make you very happy to hear that all of this is going on.
Oh, I'm absolutely loving it, because the earlier a person gets empowerment in their life, the more strong they're going to be for their whole life. And then they pass it on. These little girls are going to grow up to be very powerful, strong women, and they're going to change the lives of their family and then this next generation. It's amazing. One of the things that Courtney just mentioned was giving the opportunity. And that opportunity, she said, could be a beautiful grassy place near where a kid lives, or the alley behind her house. Here's the point, is that talent is everywhere. It only needs an opportunity. And I'm going to be talking tonight at Maryville University's auditorium, and that's one of the key things, the key takeaways I'm going to have, is that opportunity is the thing that brings out the talent.
That's happening at 7 o'clock, I'll point out. But go ahead. I didn't mean to interrupt.
Sure, no, but it is my takeaway line. Talent is everywhere. It only needs an opportunity. And by giving an opportunity, whether it's an alley or a grassy field, doesn't matter. And the other thing about running that is so amazing, it's not golf or skiing where you have to have money and you have to have a venue and you have to have lessons. It's like anybody can do it. You don't even need a pair of shoes. And it's cheap, convenient, and totally accessible. That's another reason why it's so powerful.
Let me point out that your address tonight is Marathon Woman, My Story, Your Story, and Not for Women Only. Let's bring the guys into this.
You know, I got to tell you, everybody said, oh, Catherine, you were attacked in the Boston Marathon by an angry race director. You know, you must be a man hater. I got to tell you, he was the only guy who was really ever against my running in the running world. The runners themselves have been wonderful. Male runners have been fabulous. And I don't think our sport would be anywhere near where it is today without these sort of early sensitive new age guys. I had a tough time from officials. I had a tough time from spectators. And the toughest time I had were from women themselves of that generation who were very fearful. And that's why another thing that's great about running is that it eliminates fear.
I think we have to back up just a little bit. I don't imagine everyone is familiar with your story. 1967 Boston Marathon. You signed on as KV. Was it KV Switzer?
That's correct.
Just using the initials. Pick it up from there. They didn't know you were a woman.
Okay. First of all, it's important to know that I signed my name KV Switzer for a variety of reasons. My dad misspelled my name on my birth certificate, and my name was always misspelled, Catherine. And so I was also reading J.D. Salinger, E.E. Cummings, and T.S. Eliot, and I myself wanted to be a great writer at age 12, so K.V. Switzer it was. So when it came time to run the Boston Marathon, which meant I had to prove to my coach that I could do it in practice, and a marathon's 26 miles, 385 yards. My coach didn't believe any woman anywhere could ever run a marathon. He said, if you ran in practice, I'd be the first person to take you to Boston. So hot diggity, I proved it to him, and he helped me with the paperwork. And I signed my name KV Switzer, not to defraud these officials, but certainly they thought K was not Catherine, but maybe Kurt, Carrie, or Kim. And then awarded me numbers. And in the race, now I am wearing bib number 261, and the press truck comes by, gets so excited. There's a woman in the race. Well, the race director was on the press truck, and he was not excited at all. He was infuriated. He leapt off the truck and attacked me physically.
Tried to rip off the bid,
but also throw me out of the race. He was manhandling me pretty roughly. My coach was screaming at him, but my 235-pound ex-All-American football player boyfriend came along, threw a crossbody block into the official, and threw him out of the race instead. Well, it's funny in the retelling, but it was terrible at the time. And it was an event that really changed my life, because at that moment I knew I had to finish the race. I did finish the race. I kept those numbers. And you could say the rest is history, except that the rest is a lot of hard work of taking that passion and radicalization, if you will, out to creating those very opportunities I knew women should have and would have been in the race themselves if they had had the same dad I had who told me to go out and run at age 12.
But it took history a couple of years to catch up, didn't it?
Not a couple of years, 5 years.
5 years, yeah.
Yeah, we women worked really hard. It took 5 years before we got into the Boston Marathon officially. And then my ambition began to go global, because I said that we have to change the situation around the world. And I worked hard with other women, of course, but I created a global series of women's races to get the women's marathon then included in the Olympic Games. And that was a real game changer.
Courtney Berg, did you know this story before getting involved with Catherine and this whole process with Girls on the Run?
You know, I was sharing with Catherine earlier today that when I first ran a Boston Marathon, my family had shared a little bit about Catherine, and I was so inspired. But quite candidly, it wasn't until I had the opportunity to hear her speak and hear her share her story that it really resonated with me in a whole different way. Not just more of the specific details that, you know, she shared in her talk, but really thinking about what that means right now. I think it's really powerful as a woman who grew up always having the opportunity because of Title IX. Mm-hmm. That is a tremendous privilege that I know. And I think it's really important that we realize that and then ask ourselves, well, now what? I think it's really, really powerful to hear not only what Catherine has done, but then to challenge us to say, okay, now what? Because what's so inspiring for me is that Catherine hasn't stopped. One, she hasn't stopped running. But two, she hasn't stopped pushing that power out to other women in across the world.
Let's take a quick call here. Molly wants to join us from St. Louis. Let's hear what Molly has to say. Go ahead. Thank you for being with us. You're on the air.
Hi. I just wanted to share. I have a daughter who is also a Catherine. She was 8 last year when she started the Girls on the Run program. She's not athletic. She's kind of a klutz like her mom. But she did the Girls on the Run program. She was almost like always very close to the last, but she was so proud of herself. She described herself as a runner. When she got that medal from Girls on the Run, she wore it to school for days. And it was so great to see. And I'm a person who is overweight myself. It's so great that she has that outlet, and she feels so great about herself, but she also is like, I'm a runner, and so she will go and do that running.
You know, that is so great, and she wears that medal. I mean, she'll be empowered for the rest of her life from this. She might not go on and run for the rest of her life, but I suspect she will. It's a great, great story.
Molly, thank you so much for calling, and thank you, Catherine, for being a Girl on the Run. And I just have to kind of say, you know, superstar to you, Mom, for knowing that your daughter has that within her and giving her that awesome gift and opportunity to feel her power. I can't wait. I know fast forward maybe 20 years, we're going to be like, and then CEO Catherine went on to.
Yeah, and I also encourage all the people out there, because, I mean, I thought, oh, my gosh, I don't know how she's going to do because she's slower and all this kind of stuff. But it is a great program. You don't have to be an athlete. You don't have to be an actual athlete to do it. It's just great for all girls.
I think what's also great about this program is it's non-judgmental. You know, there are no little queen bees and no cliques in this program. They come together regardless of their economics and cultural backgrounds, and they're non-judgmental. That's a wonderful thing to grow up with in terms of equality.
Catherine, how do you assess your own role in the marathon world? I mean, women marathoners in the Olympics are something that followed your situation there. You've obviously been very influential. How do you assess that role?
Well, I assess my role as a visionary and as an advocate. And it's not just in the world of marathon running, but in the world of women's social history. And it's not just because the picture of the man throwing me out of the Boston Marathon has become one of the most dynamic photos in women's equal rights. It's about actively reaching out to women and making them part of a more global community of empowerment. Right now, in fact, well beyond the 1984 Olympic inclusion, my old bib number 261 has become suddenly a magic number for empowerment, and we've created the 501c3 Foundation 261 Fearless, where we are now taking this message globally thanks to the power of the internet with clubs, ambassador program, training programs, reaching out to these women around the world who have no opportunities and giving them the opportunity. And I'm excited. I think we can continue to change the world.
But it did take 17 years after the 67 Boston Marathon for it to become an Olympic
sport. You know what? In terms of the International Olympic Committee, Don, that's warp speed. I got to tell you, if we had followed the protocol of getting an event in the Olympic Games, we would not have had a women's marathon to 2012. So that it was warp speed. People said I was off my conk when I said I'm going to get the marathon in the Olympic Games.
I have to ask this because obviously it was a major event. But what were your thoughts during the Boston Marathon bombing?
I was on the finish line, as I have been for 39 years, if you can imagine. I've done the broadcast of that race for 39 years. So I was on the photo bridge across the finish line. And I had left 20 minutes before the bombing because I moved into the press room to start the interviews of the winners. Mm. So I was not there for the actual bombing. Heard it naturally from my window and knew instantly it was a bomb. Don, I hate to tell you this. I was not surprised. I have been waiting for this for a long time. And that's because running is wholly a force for good and therefore a perfect photo op for a terrorist. And I always thought that it was going to be another event. I won't tell you which one, but I just knew it was going to happen at some time or the other or that it was ripe to happen. It was not about running. It was about a photo op for some amateur terrorists.
Yeah. Courtney, did that event have any impact on Girls on the Run and interest in the sport?
In regards to how we function?
Just in terms of young ladies reacting to it and saying, maybe I don't want to do this?
Well, you know, that's a really good question, Don. We saw it in sort of two ways. One was our girls, and this is part of what is so powerful about Girls on the Run, is immediately thinking about the families that were affected. One of the components of Girls on the Run is every team does a community service project. And what the girls learn through that is that they can affect change in their community or around them. And we immediately saw girls and teams thinking beyond themselves, thinking, what can they do? What are letters of compassion? What are actions of compassion that they can do? And that, while it might seem very small, is so powerful, not just to a 9, 10, 11-year-old, but to any of us, truly, because when we are hit with these major things and say, oh, gosh, now what? Or what does this mean for me? That is a powerful act, to Catherine's point, against something very negative. And like any of us, it did give us pause to say, what are we doing to ensure that our girls are always safe, our families are always safe? And so that was something we took quite seriously. And I feel very confident in how we constantly look at our race and would never, ever for a moment think that we are putting our girls or our families in any sort of danger.
We only have 1 minute left. And Catherine, I'll go back to you to just conclude this. Your basic message tonight at Maryville is going to be?
That the earlier a girl can become empowered, the better her life is going to be and the better the world is going to be. And let's give every little girl, and boy for that matter, every opportunity to be empowered and to give them every little bit of encouragement that we can.
Yeah, let's not leave the boys out of this.
Absolutely not.
We'll end it on that note. I want to thank you so much, Catherine Switzer, for being with us.
Thank you, Tom.
Great to meet you, and congratulations on all that you've accomplished. Courtney Berg of the Girls on the Run, thank you for being with us. Once again, that's going to be happening. Catherine's presentation tonight at 7 o'clock at the Maryville University Auditorium. Be there or be square, as they say, right? Thank you, ladies, so much for being with us.
Thank you.
And to our audience, we'll see you tomorrow.